have loved you, so you must love one another. Jesus commanded his disciples at the Last Supper. He said the world will know we are Christians, and moreover, will know who he is, when his followers are united in love. God has a large stake in how we love. John adds that through love we make known an invisible God. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. In his famous chapter on love in 1 Corinthians 13, Paul declared that without love all our words and deeds dissonate, like an annoying cymbal or clanging gong, irritating noises that call to mind some of the words people use to describe Christians. A friend of mine who worked as a consultant in the corporate world reviewed all the courses he had taken and taught on principles of good management. It occurred to him that he had never taken a course in how to love, even though the Bible presents it as the primary command in life. At a gathering I attended, he asked us to think about one question. When have I felt loved? I came up with a list. When someone listens to me attentively, makes me feel important, encourages me, and sometimes even challenges me, cares for me when I'm hurting, gives me an unexpected gift. Then he told us that when he guided some of his clients through the same exercise, one female executive in a dysfunctional company decided to put the principle into practice. Although her company discouraged fraternizing, this woman started going down the hall and stopping in offices to visit her employees, with no real agenda. The first person was terrified, thinking she had come into his office to fire him. "No, no," she said. "I just figured that after 3 years of working together, I should get to know you." She spent some time with all 13 of her employees until one day her own boss called her in. "I don't know what the hell you're doing," he said, "but this company was almost bankrupt. It turned around, and when I asked our personnel what happened, everybody said you were responsible." Most conversions come about as an outgrowth of friendship. All the expensive and well-designed programs of evangelism and church growth combined produce only a fraction of the results of simple friendship. In the words of Tim Keller, don't think in terms of what used to be called friendship evangelism. Think in terms of friendship. Your evangelism should be organic and natural, not a bunch of bullet points and agenda items that you enter into a conversation hoping to get to so you're almost like a marketer. Here's a good test of how well we love. Are other people glad to be with us? Somehow, Jesus managed to attract the kind of people frowned upon.